Here we go.
Get ready, get set for the best movie and pop culture talk in the universe. It's the Good Brothers on Mercado Airwaves with your hosts, Alex Mercado and Mike Mercado.
Welcome back to another episode of the Good Brothers. I'm Alex, that's Mike. We are the Good Brothers, the bestest of brothers in the Midwest suburb, in the Chicagoland era, and in the multiverse where mutants definitely do exist.
Absolutely, and where a bunch of kids who were born on the same day exist. Sorry, Good Brother, I have Umbrella Academy on the forefront in the mind because I just finished season one. I've been up since 4:30 in the morning so I could start season two with the lovely Nicole Mancha, but I absolutely adored it. And but I'm the Good Brother, Mike Mercado.
Yeah, and like a normal person, I watched season two already. So we'll have a non-spoiler review of that today.
Yeah, and then we will have a full deep dive review of it next week, so yeah. We can have a little fun with that. Leavitt's was a dollar short and a day behind, Good Brother. But
well, one of us.
Yeah, but
I got enough change for both.
But yeah, but we do have a lot of stuff to cover in between. Disney Plus is getting a big acquisition. We'll talk about that.
Called it.
I have a review for a movie that I got to see on Netflix as well. We'll get to that. We also have to talk a little bit about wrestling, some craziness. I thought Monday was going to be the craziest day. Wednesday ended up being an even crazier day as well. So we'll get into all that. And anything the crazy Good Brother has in that mind of his, we'll get into all that. But let's start with the news of the podcast, Good Brother. The news of, honestly, the month that isn't coronavirus or sports-related. Mulan, we finally have word on this Mulan flick. This comes from us from CNN Business in New York. Disney announced on Tuesday that the remake of the 1998 animated classic will be heading to Disney Plus, the company's new streaming service, for an additional fee of $29.99. The film will be available on September 4th. Bob Chapek, Disney's CEO, said the pandemic has forced the company to think of, quote, different approaches to better serve consumers. So, Good Brother, here we are. We are recording this on August 6, 2020. It's been released on August 7, 2020 in the beautiful city of Chicago and all over the interweb. This has been one of those movies that we've all been wondering about. Tenants has really taken a lot of that attention away because of it being constantly pushed. But here we are. We have an idea. We have solid information from the horse's mouth. What do you think about this move for Mulan?
We've talked about it for weeks, and we called it the other day. This would be the movie to make such a move. They already have announced that this isn't a trend. They're not trying to make it a trend. And it's Disney, though. If it goes very well, it will be a trend. I think it makes the most sense because Mulan is definitely one of those where people were going to question seeing it. The remakes have been very hit or miss, but they make a lot of money, unless you're Dumbo. So I'm fascinated. I want to see how much money it makes. I think the price is very reasonable because that's what? So let's say two tickets. That's basically in a bigger movie theater chain, an AMC. That's about two tickets right there. Let's say like $14.50, $12.50. So round it up. I think that's a very reasonable price to charge for this movie. I think you and me are going to do something special and watch it together and review it right after. So that'll kind of bring us back to the old times of how we used to review movies last year. I think it's a smart move. I think it's going to be a trend because I do think it'll be successful. I think people are craving entertainment. Sports has shown that. I mean, you more know that more than anyone. Being the sports guy, we thrive on that entertainment. So I think this is going to be great. Everyone's going to be talking about it. I think everyone's going to go out and watch it and rent it. Everyone has Disney Plus already. Hamilton showed that off. So now all you have to do is add, okay, for $30, you can rent this. And we talk about all the time, you know, a family of four going to the movie theater, that's almost an $80 experience right there. That's why some of these, especially animated movies or Disney-style movies, this might be a trend for them to show we can make money at home. These TVs are huge. These entertainment centers are affordable and advanced enough where we can release a movie like Mulan and be okay and make our money back.
I think the only bummer I have, Good Brother, about Mulan is we won't be able to get to see it in the big screen. I wanted to see that epic scaleness and see China and like all the special moments that Disney had for us that they had in store for us. But to be honest with you, it's just you have to be willing to go with the times. You have to be willing to adapt. In 2020, and that's what Disney did. I think they tried as much as they can to push things forward. And I will say, to incorporate the sports world, and if you're ever interested to see how we're handling and talking about COVID-19 in the sports world, check us out at Sports from the Couch. I think the big thing is you can't delay the inevitability of either postponing or just straight up canceling. And sports is going through that right now, where they're delaying, postponing, and canceling outright. Movies have had the Hollywood has had that weird moment of like, no, we're just going to push. We're just going to push. Some have already released. But I think we finally come to that moment for a lot of studios of, are we doing this in 2020 or are we not? Like, it's come to that point, because we know in the United States this isn't going away anywhere. And if you think, medically speaking, people's wellness is at people's forefront, it's already August, good brother. You and I know here in the United States, and people around the world when they watch their news, we're getting to election season. So there's no guarantee about stability and what's going to happen. Are these movie companies going to have enough faith to release these films here? So we know what's going to happen with Tenet, and now we know what's happening in Mulan. I don't know.
Which were the two that you've been eyeing, because they never made an official decision. And I feel like you're correct. This was the time. They had to make a move, and both went a very different direction on the move they are going to make.
So I'm wondering at this point, do the rest of the studios just do this? Do those, and whatever studios we have left in Hollywood at this point, do they just decide it's a wash? Either it comes out on our streaming platforms this year, or everything is just pushed to 2021, and we'll figure it out then.
I think that's what we're going to see. But again, you always say it, the election can really change things. Like, December and November can look very different than August and September look.
Oh, absolutely. Think about how February and March look compared to April and May.
Exactly.
Now, what do you think about the $30 price point?
I think it's a perfect price. I think you can't go any cheaper, or else you got to make your money back. This is a business. If we want to continue to see movies like this being made, financially, this makes the most sense if we want to see these movies continue to be made, because we feel like, oh, we're always going to have superhero movies and these big blockbusters. If the movie theater chain starts going down like we think it might, we're not going to see a lot of these movies being made, because there's not going to be companies willing to say, we'll give you $300 million for a spinoff of Harry Potter, because that didn't work out too well, or a sixth Pirates of the Caribbean movie. So for some of these bigger movies, this is very important. Like, us supporting it right now is going to keep these live action remakes going. So I'm very interested to see how much money it makes. But I think $30 is a very reasonable and fair price to charge.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for people who Disney Plus is a fairly new app. So it's going to be hard for, I think, people to go ahead and spend an extra $30. I think it's going to be really hard for people to go onto a free app and then, you know, see that they're going to have to put their credit card in again, or that there's going to be an additional charge.
They're already paying the $6.99. But I'll give Disney Plus all the credit. They're having an amazing first year. Like, they just got off the Hamilton hype. And look, oh, Beyonce just drops the whole thing.
Sure.
And, you know, is number one trending in the world that day. So to me, they're making big power moves, and I appreciate them making big power moves. Disney in general is making big power moves. They just announced the female director of Candyman is going to be the director of Captain Marvel 2.
That is correct. Captain Marvel 2 has its director, and it is the director of Candyman, Naya DaCosta. I'm not too sure, but obviously to me, this indicates Disney has a track record of doing this. They do not hire directors they do not believe have some form of potential. And when they do get somebody early, it's because they've seen the film that they're working on and that they're moving in a different – if they're moving in a direction that they really like, or that they see something in it. So I think this is nothing but great news that we know. This is great news for Candyman.
That's what I was just saying, because we're still – the trailers were good. But I think we were still questioning of the style they were going to go for in this I believe it's classic. We're a little biased since it is more of a local story, a Chicago-based story.
Yeah.
So we definitely have a special spot for Candyman, and it's still one of the most terrifying movies I've ever seen. So I was a little worried with trailers. I'm like, I hope this doesn't get campy. But if they have this much faith in her right now, that must be a great movie. So I'm really excited. I'm with you. This makes me even more excited for Candyman. To see, like, okay, let me see what you can do now.
And I love that Disney is going with a fairly unknown director at this moment. Because once Candyman crushes, obviously it'll be in the zeitgeist.
This could be the next Ava DuVernay.
And the thing is, it's beyond just that. We can have the new Spielberg. Like, it's not even, like, in a bubble. We know that Disney can as a company, has an eye for potential future and for more work and whatnot. I mean, you know, when they got Ryan Coogler, and when you just see that they got Scott Derrickson, and they got the Russo brothers, mm-hmm. like they just know how to get talent at a young stage in their career, at the very least in a mainstream level, and make it be able to get to like this next hype level. So yeah. I'm super excited just for what this means for Candyman. Something that I love the Clive Barker story. Mm-hmm. I love the first film. I kind of find the series to be kind of goofy. Yeah. Shout out to the Kill Count, to Dead Meat, to James, and with his girlfriend Chelsea. They do a great job over at Dead Meat. So you guys need to definitely check that out. But they did a series on Candyman. And it really just shows that this story, because the weird thing is the story wasn't about Chicago when it was first made. Mm. And we've adopted it in this yep. city as like our own story and our own movie. Just as much as The Fugitive is part of Chicago lore, so is Candyman.
There's a beautiful backstory to the Candyman character in general, just about the racial tensions. And I think it's a story that, I mean, look at us. We're already going on a separate tirade about Candyman just from hearing who the director is. So that should tell you something. And, you know, look at James Gunn over at Warner Brothers now, doing Suicide Squad. Because of what Disney allowed him to do, he has full reign over the new Suicide Squad movie. So that goes to show you Disney knows what they're doing, and they've made a lot of big power moves this year.
Speaking of power moves, good brother, I got to see a movie on Netflix that has been out for about 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adored it. It's a movie that I think really shows that Netflix can do a lot of interesting things if they get the right star. And I got to see Old Guard. So I know you got a chance to actually review it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Let me get a little bit of gush time into it because I finally got a chance to catch up. Like,
I think you're more with the audience because I liked it a lot. Uh-huh. I think you loved it, and I think the audience loved it. And the numbers came out and showed that the audience really really went to it.
And it explains why I really don't remember your review of it, because it didn't stick with me that you necessarily like loved it like John Wick or one of these other like action thrillers.
No, Palm Springs out of that weekend definitely won for me.
So that and it explains a lot, because I actually got a chance to watch Old Guard, and I loved it. I have some little complaints about it, but just as in general, I'm not going to be so harsh on it, because for the times that we're in, for who was in that movie, and for the topic that it was and what they were trying to go for, I think they nailed it. I think it swims in sevens. Yeah. And I think that's the best way to put it. You're not getting a 10 out of 10. You're not getting a 3 out of 10. You're getting a solid 7. Charlize Theron literally can do no wrong to me. Like, she is such a great actress, and I love that she knows how great she is, but she can also play into silliness. She could play into the extreme. And I think there's not a lot of actresses or actors that can lean into it and not look foolish.
If you come to me and say she is the best actor in Hollywood right now, you have an argument.
Yeah, I
have a case.
Yeah. I mean,
I wouldn't bat an eyelash at that.
I was explaining to Nicole, I'm like, have you ever seen The Devil's Advocate? And then have you ever seen Monster? And then watch this one. I'm like, you could see that she does it all. A Bombshell. It's like she's literally one of the greatest actresses. And I think Old Guard shows that, to me, without her, very weak movie.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And it's not because it's a bad movie. She's the straw that just stirs that drink.
She brings it to me. I give it an 8. She brings it from a 7 to an 8 with her presence alone. Now, did you like the music? Because I think people's biggest complaint was music placement. And that seems to be a trend in Hollywood right now.
I hated it. People
loving music and hate music. I liked it a lot. So I'm always like different in the minority, because I like the way Suicide Squad did their music. I like the way they did their music. It's fun, I think.
I think it's A-okay to put music into it if you want to make sure that you're connecting to a younger audience, to make sure that you show that, hey, we know what sounds good. And just because it sounds good and it matches verbally a scene in a movie doesn't mean that you need to put it there. And I think a lot of these scenes with the music, it's weird. It's like it's like having something very salty that tastes delicious and something very sweet that tastes delicious. But they don't always go together. I felt like a lot of these things were great music, great songs, put to great scenes on YouTube. Opposed to like a John Wick film where the music just seemed to be part of the scene. Yeah. Like, it's part of it, transition. Like, it's as much a part of it as the action is, as the lines are. Now, is the music good? Like, is the soundtrack good to it? Yeah, absolutely.
So it didn't distract you?
It did distract me in the movie.
So that's what brought your score down a bit?
Because here's the thing, too. It was almost like a video game. Every single time we heard music go on, we knew a fight scene was about to come.
I like it.
And I think it's cool, but there's the difference, the subtlety of like a great action film's music compared to good music in a good action film.
Yeah. While we're on Netflix, funny thing, you know, we joke about all the time that I didn't love the new Unsolved Mysteries. Netflix put out their numbers. It's still by far the number one thing this year Netflix has released.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's doing crazy numbers, which I'm going to have to give it a rewatch. Maybe I got to skip around some episodes. I hate doing that, but maybe in this particular show, I'll be more entertained if I do. So I thought that was fascinating that you were on that train right away.
Yeah.
And to see those numbers come out, because Netflix doesn't love to release numbers, that it's the biggest thing in the last 8 months. Very impressive.
Well, and I think a lot of it is internet sleuthing. Mm. I think nostalgia. And it's well made. I mean, you may not like it, but it's very well made.
The Hotel Case. I got to check that one out.
It's the one everybody's talking about. It's the Salon episode, I think, is still the one that is the strongest episode to me with the wife that goes missing.
Yeah.
It is still the strongest episode. It's the one a lot of people talk about. The Alien episode, obviously, a lot of people talk about for different reasons. So I'm really interested to see what they do moving forward. Obviously, it's not the same as the original Unsolved Mystery, so I don't know if the turnaround is going to be as quick. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could just make a new one next year.
Netflix can do anything, Mike.
That's true. I also think it's awesome that we're having another strong Netflix and Amazon year when it comes to the superhero shows.
I mean, beside what? Hulu? But Hulu's kind of in a bundle as is.
Just
so,
because of who
So
who owns
I, I don't really count that. So you're like Amazon, HBO right now would be the one. But even them with their documentaries keep them afloat and the content they have going back. So these streaming wars are getting hotter and hotter.
As we were mentioning earlier, that you got to finish season 2 of Umbrella Academy.
10 out of 10.
I just finished season 1 of Umbrella Academy. Literally, as we're recording, woke up at 4:30 in the morning to watch it and get through it so the lovely Nicole Machi and I could go ahead and watch season 2. I love that on the same years that we got Umbrella Academy and The Boys season 1, we're getting the same year season 2 of both shows. I'm super excited.
And both got season 3s announced.
And that is so awesome. I cannot wait to see what happens. But I will give my quick review of season 1.
Yeah.
Because then we will lead into your review of season 2. And then next week we will do a complete spoiler. I loved season 1. I love the music. I love the quirkiness. I love the sincerity in it. I love that it's not all happy. I love in the same way that it's not all happy and it is cynical, it's still very charming. It's not dire and doom and gloom. Ellen Page is obviously the star when it comes to the name. I think the cast surrounding her is so good and so believable in their roles. I love every single storyline. I like how it played out. I personally saw the twist very early into it. It just made sense to me.
Yeah.
So when we got there, it didn't bother me that I guessed it. My favorite character is probably 5. My favorite scene, you know, a spoiler alert for season 1 of Umbrella Academy.
That was in 3, 2, 1. Spoil it.
The ending with the moon shook me to my core. I text this to you and Nicole. One of my most irrational fears.
Completely irrational.
It's totally irrational is to be alive when an asteroid, the moon blows up, and see the chunks fall down on Earth. Like, to me, that is so, like, anxiety-ridden
you
fear.
You watch too much movies.
And it,
that's
honestly,
coming
probably,
from me.
Yeah, like, it probably is. Like, just that idea of watching it come down. I blame Majora's Mask as well.
That's a good point.
So, watching that happen in Umbrella Academy leading into season 2, super excited about that. But with that in mind, non-spoiler now review. Generally speaking, I know you love season 1. I know you're a big fan of The Boys as well. So to have these shows back, obviously there's going to be some comps. But I think the comps are so surface level that once you actually start talking about both shows, there really is no comparison. They belong on the same. They're as much the same as Captain America and Iron Man are Avengers, but so different. That's how I feel The Boys and Umbrella Academy is. With that in mind, I love season 1. Almost a perfect season, just like The Boys season 1. You saw season 2. What are your thoughts?
I'll keep it short because we'll do a deep dive next week. Because I do think we're seeing Umbrella Academy, the way they use their social media. I think The Boys overall is a better show. Not by much. I'm talking about like 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 for TV. I think the only problem with The Boys, it's very raw. It's very gritty.
Yeah.
I don't think it's easily approachable by a lot of people. Umbrella Academy, I think you said the perfect word there. Charming. There's a charm to it. It's beautiful. It looks pretty. It's quirky. It's fun. It's very the new thing, like that Stranger Things kind of started, where it's fun to not necessarily be in. I don't want to stay in the past because I think that's where Stranger Things doesn't get me. But I like to throw back to it because that's how fashion works too, is it all comes back in circles. So that's the style. I think The Boys, Umbrella Academy, and Doom Patrol have showed the modern hit is ensemble cast, couple A-listers. You don't need the Avengers out there, and some nice, solid acting, good chemistry, good charm. And you're going to carry these shows for at least 3 to 5 seasons.
Yeah, and I love, I mean, now that, what was your number score?
So season one, I gave about an 8.5 out of 10. This one, I gave about a 9 out of 10.
Awesome.
I think it's even, if you love like it. Season one, this one's even better. The character growth is even better. And the setup for season three is amazing.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Let me give some shout outs too, though. I love Mary J. Blige as Cha-Cha in it. I love Hazel in it. They were multi-layered. They grow throughout the series, so you kind of start liking them a little bit more. Ellen Page is my least favorite character in the show.
I'll tell you, on purpose,
she's
one of the best in season two.
And I'm sure she's going to rock
the arc. Yeah. Like, everyone's arc is so great. And my personal favorite is Luther, obviously. Luther's big old gorilla-looking guy.
Luther's my favorite. Yeah, Luther has a great arc. I love Diego's arc. I love the brother's arc with Ben and with Klaus. I just love everything they did with these characters. The acting with these characters really made me believe the struggle they were going through at that given time. The way they portray Klaus, you could feel the junkiness, but also the good heart in him. They also kept it real. I think more than anything, and what I appreciated, it's like they never tried to BS the audience and make it be like, there's going to be a happy ending. No, they're all going to forgive everything. They're going to love their dad. Their dad is not actually a big asshole. Mm-hmm. It's like they stuck to what the character arc is and like the damage they are, but they lean into it in a comical, nice way. Opposed to The Boys, where it's like they lean into the bad with the grittiness to it, with the cynicism to it.
And I think you said it best right there, where I love the family aspect of, and we talk about it all the time, you're not going to always like your family. You might not like your family at all, but at the end of the day, you love your family. You protect your family. And I think the message of the show is that of, we don't like each other. We don't even talk to each other, really. But you're my sister. You're my brother. This is our family. That, at the end of the day, is above all the rest. And I think that's a great message. And it comes across, like, the chemistry of the cast is fantastic.
Like, when you see it with Diego and they have Ellen Page in the safe into like that the prison essentially, and he's like, no, we need to help her. He's the one that's been the meanest to her. Mm-hmm. And when she was at her most vulnerable, he was trying to be there with her to defend her. And I think like that goes to show that encompasses he's the Raphael of the family.
And exactly. And you see a lot more of that in season two of their connection and their bond.
And it should be there. Now, I think you can tell that Netflix didn't realize in season one what they had. They knew they had a good show.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know they had a cultural, like pop culture. Like
you can tell the difference when they rolled out season two and just how they're using their platform now. You're completely right. You can definitely tell it's one of those, oh, we got something. Okay.
And I would think, and what's funny though, is because then they do like these other shows, like that Ultra Carbon show that looks like Blade Runner. And like some people watch it, but it wasn't like they put all this marketing on it and they didn't know Stranger Things was going to be the big hit that ended up being. It's like Netflix does that a lot. Netflix doesn't realize what it is that makes people enjoy these shows. And once they do, they double down on it.
Look at Space Force. That is a very average, mediocre show. All it's got going for it is we have Steve Carell and the guys into The Office. Mediocre. It was number one for so long because they pushed it and pushed it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you're right. They miss the ball. Sometimes they pick it up and score a touchdown.
Netflix has the worst marketing department of any streaming service.
I think HBO is worse.
No, HBO lives off of the brand HBO.
Exactly. So if we're going off that, HBO would be last because they can afford it. I think Disney's just so obnoxiously good at it. It's making Netflix look bad. I think Netflix has gotten better. But like you said, sometimes they'll put a lot of money in for some reason where they draw the line is the advertisement, which is you already spent so much money on this product and now you're like, oh, I'm not going to advertise it compared to, okay, this average show with Steve Carell, we're going to advertise the heck out of it and make people believe it's like a Bird Box thing. You're making me believe this very average and okay thing is way better than it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and I guess because it was part of the cultural zeitgeist and that they knew it was going to hit a market because of what's going on politically, I understand where they were coming from. It did get them a nomination, so I understand it, but I just think it's funny.
And people enjoy it. I don't personally enjoy it, but people do.
I just think it's funny what Netflix chooses to market and what ends up being the big hits on that streaming service because it's not always what they push. It's usually something random.
And like the Old Guard, like they push that heavily and they come out with a bunch of movies very similar to that with an A-lister, an action movie. And sometimes you'll see these five get pushed and they get bare and you're like, I didn't know Matt Damon was in this random or Mark Wahlberg was in this random movie because it got no advertisement. And then you hear the Old Guard everywhere. Everyone watched the Old Guard because they pushed it so hard.
But while I'm railing on them, they did knock it out of the park with Umbrella Academy Season 1 and according to the Good Brothers Season 2. We'll have our spoiler review next week of Umbrella Academy Season 2. But Good Brother, any final thoughts about the TV and film world before we get ourselves dirty with Raw Underground?
No, I think we ran down that rabbit hole of, you know, the platform wars we're in this year, or the streaming wars, if you will. And, you know, I think it's funny we're talking all this stuff about how Netflix needs to do this and this. I'm just happy we're getting so much entertainment. There's definitely a plethora of things to watch right now, people. Like, I'm okay the movie's not opening because there's so much I need to watch, though.
Do you think that one of these major films, I mean, speaking of that, before we move on into our sports entertainment conversation, what do you, now that we've seen what Netflix has put out when it comes to their regular TV shows, now that we know what's going on with Mulan, putting it all together, 2020, does a big blockbuster film release in the United States, North American theaters?
I gotta say yes or no, basically.
That's up to you. You can elaborate if you want. You can be yes or no. What is your gut saying to you?
Yes, in December.
Very good.
Christmas weekend. We'll get something.
We sure as hell got something from WWE, though, Good Brother. And that was Raw Underground. Shane O'Mac is back. And like they said on Twitter, we're going to push new talent, put new faces, and we'll start off with Shane McMahon. But I got to be honest with you. I like some of it.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I'm interested to see week two.
Yeah, and if anything else, if we don't like it, even if we loved it, we know chances are it'll only be on our television for like
a month. None of this matters.
It just doesn't matter. What does matter is I think the thing they're doing with Pat McAfee and Adam Cole, very interested to see what their end game is. Like, are they trying to make Pat McAfee something? Do they not care about
it? Is this a Gronk sort of thing where we just need him to kind of boost some ratings? Because he's very popular. Like, he gets a lot of hits.
But is he popping a rating? He might get hits on social
media. That's the question. We'll find out today.
Yeah, so that's going to be really interesting. But Adam Cole, too. Like, do you think Adam Cole and Undisputed Era are those retribution people?
No, I don't think so. I think that's going to end up being like Ricochet, Alexander, and Ali.
Oh, okay. So I think it's the mixture of what Ali was doing on SmackDown and not
sort
just
of,
it
yeah.
Up over here.
Well, we're still getting the glitches on SmackDown too. So maybe that wasn't Ali the whole time. Maybe that was like a red herring of someone else.
Or it was Ali and now they're just giving it to somebody else.
Maybe this is NXT guys coming up. Maybe it is Undisputed Era.
It could be. I think
that's why they're not showing them yet because they're still dragging this out. I think this Pat McAfee. I always say McAfee. Pat McAfee. I think this also is going to try to show, is Adam Cole a household name? Like, if you put him and this big name together, Adam Cole actually is, people kind of like him. Now we can push him a little more. Mm-hmm. I think that's also the side hustle they're doing is like, let's see. Okay, Adam Cole, you're with a celebrity. Let's see how people react to this. Maybe you are as popular as you think you are.
I'm just waiting to see the dirt sheet start saying that he's getting buried because he won't sign a contract and they're going to make him lose to a punter from the NFL.
I don't think that's true.
Any thoughts about AEW? They had Jon Moxley.
Eazy-E was on there.
Oh, yes. Eric.
The worst kept secret in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Eric Bischoff was the moderator for Orange Cassidy and Jericho, which I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was good.
I love Orange Cassidy.
He's okay.
He's hilarious.
Right. Yeah, I like him.
So funny.
He's not my favorite, but I don't hate him as much as like Jim Cornette does.
Yeah.
I don't hate him at all. He's
got a nice spot. Like, you definitely need people like
my
that.
My real question is, does he main event WrestleMania? Like, not everybody does, but the question always is, can you see this person main eventing WrestleMania? And it's like Orange Cassidy is going to make so much money in this business. He's going to be beloved.
He'll open a WrestleMania.
He might open a WrestleMania.
I think he's like to have Enzo, but like not a dick. And I love Enzo Amore. I think as a character, he was fantastic with Big Cass, and I hope they make their way back to a big company one day. Mm-hmm. It's one of those where, he ain't going to be the main event guy, but he'll open a WrestleMania and get you a nice big pop.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen moving forward if we do start now seeing stadiums open and arenas open, what all this means.
Yeah.
Like, does any of this mean anything in AEW and WWE?
Jericho always says it. We don't know who's over right now. It's very hard to see.
Yep.
And I, you know what? Jericho's up and down for me. He's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer, Mount Rushmore for sure. Always give him that. Some of his work I can give or take. You know, Jericho has 10 personalities. I like probably 7 out of the 10, which is better than any other wrestler ever will.
Sure.
I like what he's doing now, but I like when he says that. He's like, we don't know who's over. When we get crowds back, maybe Orange Cassidy is the most over guy. Maybe Jericho's the most over guy. Maybe we find out Jon Moxley is more over than we think he is, because, you know, we're not loving his championship run, but maybe that's because there is no audience to play off of.
And I also, I think when fans come back, we're going to learn how they react to, like, their heels, how they react to their booking. They've booked a little differently, too. I think they're still booking their heels really bad, but
AEW or NXT?
AEW.
WWE
has
Randy Orton. WWE is a heel machine. Yeah, they're fine. And Killer Cross.
Let me ask you, do you think Orton takes the title off of Drew?
Nope. But the fact that we're questioning it, that's how good they're setting this up, is that we're questioning it. And that's what's going to prove you. That's why Drew McIntyre is going to be that champion. There's only one person taking the title off Drew McIntyre at this point.
Roman Reigns.
Or Brock Lesnar.
Or Brock, yes.
Honestly, like it's one of those two.
But I think that's Roman's title.
No, I think Roman is going to SmackDown. I think that's Brock's title.
That is Brock's title.
Because remember, this was supposed to be Brock. Like Brock, they were supposed to get a rematch by SummerSlam. But then with no crowds, they're not going to use Brock Lesnar with no crowds, which I don't blame them.
But I still think they're holding off hope that they might have a crowd soon after WrestleMania.
Because what I said, the Fiend will take the title from Braun, and then Roman will take that title from the Fiend. And then but for McIntyre, it's either going to be Brock or an up-and-comer like Undisputed Era, Adam Cole.
I've had this theory about what happens moving forward with wrestling, and I wonder if WWE goes back to the same type of touring they did on television standards. So what I mean is they're still going to do house shows because house shows is what makes them money. But the arena shows, maybe they come to Chicago once a year and it's only for a pay-per-view. But the two Raws they would have done here, they do it back at Performance Center to cut back on cost.
I mean, look at the huge profit they made. I mean, I know
because it's not spending.
Exactly. You're not spending. You know, we've talked all the smack about the releases and the timing. We've done that. Mm-hmm. But as a money standpoint, it is like you're not paying for production. You're not paying to travel and bring all this. You bring your whole crew with you. You're showing a profit.
I wonder if you do two stadium shows a year and you do maybe 2/3 of the touring you did before.
I don't know. I mean, they added a pay-per-view the week after SummerSlam because they can.
So weird.
And look at the trend that started with NXT, Impact, and AEW of these. We're doing special events. We're doing 2-week special events that we can film really quick and give you this something besides. Like, Impact's about to do that now.
What do you think about how Impact's been the last few weeks?
They're fine. They're always going to have the stigma that it's Impact, that it's TNA. I think they do very good work, though, and I like the guys they have.
The Good Brothers are leaning on the Good Brothers now, though.
It is what it is. Yeah, man.
They're finally leaning on it.
Like, they got EC3 up in there. They got Heath Slater up in there. They got a lot of nice talent. They put up some decent matches. But at the end of the day, the stigma is always going to be the stigma.
And it's just because of those three freaking letters.
Like, until you get a big TV deal, I just don't see that us ever getting over it. And especially a show like Impact, where now you have no audience. I'm like, okay, we really can see the production difference between an AEW, NXT, and then Impact.
And Good Brother, staying in the wrestling world, but a little bit more heading into the sports world, the XFL stays in the wrestling family, but with the great one himself, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and his partner, his business partner, his ex-wife, Danny Garcia.
Yes.
They bought the XFL. I mean, this is crazy. We'll talk a little bit more about it on Proper Sports from the Couch. But I think this is such a cool moment because it's somebody who has his fingers on the pulse, his entire $7 production does. It's somebody who believes in having people of color around, having entertaining people, having special people around them. And I think he has the right mind to make something like this succeed. When you saw this news come out, what did you think?
I think there's a few important things. One, this is going to be a professional sports league. Say what you love about it. owned by a black man and a Cuban woman. That's important. Diversity matters. We don't have that right now. And we talk about it on Murder Mysteries and More Of. We need more color-owned businesses, black, brown, anything like that. We need more of that. And I think this is a huge step. Had this been anyone beside The Rock, I think people would have been like, the X-Files, who cares? Yeah. The fact that it is The Rock, that it is Danny Garcia, and they're so successful, and they, you know, they produce so much content. Of course, not all of it's going to hit, but all of it has an audience. And I think that's what's really important. And this is very exciting because I was a fan of the recent X-Files. I thought
here.
It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great entertainment. But now having someone who's very in the know, I think that's going to really show and it's going to really matter. And I think you're going to start seeing a lot of people gravitate to it.
Yeah, I think it's fun news. It's like a rejuvenation into a league that was dead after this. For a second time, a league that was dead. But they bring it back to life and it's going to be fun to see what they bring new to the sports world and what changes they do make to the XFL. Good, brother. Any final thoughts? It was a fun episode. You savvy to begin with, and then at the end, we were able to just jibber-jabber and mark out a little bit about some wrestling.
That's
but
the show.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
I would like to say that even though Mike's a sports guy, I had called the Cubs and Twins being this good to start the season, and he said, meh. And I said, nope, it's going to be the Cubs and Twins. And they are now the most successful teams in MLB.
Yeah, they both have 10 wins, I think so. That's
10 and 2. The MLB put out a fun track. Put out a fun
Yeah, and I mean to talk a little bit about what Alex to mention a little bit what Alex is saying, if any of you are sports fans, I had on Paul Shavari from Baseball Weekend Journal. We talked about the beginning of the Major League Baseball season, how we're feeling about COVID-19, if they're gonna crown a World Series champion. Check that out at Sports on the Couch, wherever you get your favorite podcast.
I like these little fun snippets MLB put out. The Twins and Cubs were twins. 10-2 overall, 9-1 in the last 10, 7-1 at home, 3-1 on the road. On a 6-game winning streak, exactly 63 runs scored each.
The starting pitching for the Cubs has been really
very
great.
Solid.
The bullpen sucks for the most part. I mean, there's some nice pieces, but like the back end is decent, but like Craig Kimbrough is going to cost you a game at some point, as he already has in the regular season. But it's interesting to see, and the Chicago Blackhawks are up 2-1. In the Stanley Cup qualifiers. So
yeah,
we'll see if they make the regular playoffs. But that'll do it for us on this edition of the Good Brothers here on Mercado Airwaves. Make sure you guys are checking us out all over social media. I'm on Twitter at MikeMedia. He's on Twitter at Mercado2andAlex. And the show is on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Good Brother has merchandise. That is right. Somebody allowed the Good Brother to put his thoughts on clothing. That somebody was me. And you can find it at teespring.com/Mercado Airwaves.
I threw a fit to get this. When in doubt, merc it out.
That's teespring.com/Mercado Airwaves. Become a producer at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. There you can get our interviews ad-free before anybody else with athletes and celebrities. For the Good Brother himself, Alex Mercado.
Adios.
I'm the Good Brother, Mike Mercado. We'll see you in the next episode. The Good Brothers, here on the Mercado Airwaves Network.
Network.
Thanks for joining us here on The Good Brothers, here on Mercado Airwaves.
Hey guys, Mike here from Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at MikeMedia and on Instagram at MikeMercadoMedia. You can follow the Good Brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at TypingWhenTipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves, our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod, our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More, and of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on YouTube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network, and of course, you can support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win contests, best prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the good brother, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. Hey guys, Mike here from Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at MikeMMedia and on Instagram at MikeMercadoMedia. You can follow the good brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at TypingWhenTipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves. Our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More. And of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on YouTube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. And of course, you can support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win contests. Prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the good brother, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network.